This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We got a whole lot to do on a very busy Friday. I got to start off, though, with Deshaun Watson. He is going to make his Cleveland Browns debut tonight. As I just saw a video of him walking in to the stadium as they do have a preseason game up against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And there was this idea earlier this morning that I saw floated out there on Twitter that maybe the NFL and the person that they elected to have this appeal would come down with his ruling before the game tonight. And then that wouldn't allow the Watson camp an ample amount of time to get an injunction and a stay. And then he may not be on the field tonight. As it's 6 p.m. Eastern right now, we do not have any ruling, and there is no expectation that in the next few moments or so that we're going to find out what the final suspension is that is collectively agreed upon by the NFL and the NFLPA in this process. So we are waiting for that inevitable news to come, and it's not going to be positive for Deshaun Watson if he does not settle, because the anticipation when you hear Roger Goodell and what the NFL wants is at least a year-long suspension and most likely a large monetary fine associated with that. Now, with all that being said, I did see earlier this morning or earlier this afternoon as well, Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk tweet out, settlement of the Deshaun Watson situation is not out of the question. That is what Mike Florio is told, and he says, stay tuned. Now, if you recall, we briefly did talk about this conversation yesterday, and the Watson camp initially was willing to settle from the last week or so, ever since the 6-game suspension did get imposed by Judge Sue Robinson. If you're still following all this, because I know it can get crazy with all the different rulings and the way this process does work, the Watson camp was willing to settle on 8 games. And we even talked about this yesterday. There is no way the NFL is going to settle with the NFLPA and Deshaun Watson's camp if he's only going to take an extra 2-game suspension. It just doesn't add up. If you got 6, then you're only willing to take 8. The NFL wants 17. That is not a fair compromise. And if I'm the NFL, unless you get what you want or you are okay with the terms of the settlement, I would not settle with Deshaun Watson, because the way that this is structured and the way that this is agreed upon in the CBA, and every legal insider and legal analyst that we talk to, they don't think that Deshaun Watson really has any chance in court to just get an injunction to allow him to play on the field for week 1. So this was the bed that the NFLPA made, and now they have to lie in it, because I don't really see why the NFL would settle with Deshaun Watson unless he takes a significant fine and is going to miss somewhere in the range of 12 or 14 games. But from an NFL and an optics standpoint, if you want 17, you should go get 17 games on a suspension when talking about Deshaun Watson. The bottom line is this. Deshaun Watson needs to be realistic, and he needs to be realistic right now. If this is going to be the negotiating game of we're going to start low, it's one thing to start low or aim high in a negotiation. I think we've all done that when you're going for a new contract, or you're trying to negotiate a salary, you ask for a number, and then eventually it gets negotiated down. But for Deshaun Watson to start as only a minimal two-game increase, if I'm the NFL, I tell him to go screw. I would tell him, we're not settling with you, and that's the last time we'll have any settlement talks. And when you want to actually have a realistic offer and a realistic attempt at settling, then you could pick up the phone and then you could call us. Because when you read Judge Sue Robinson's ruling, it's still baffling. Her explanation on how it was only six games. Because she admitted that his behavior was predatory. She admitted that it was egregious behavior. And just because you're going to say, yeah, there was no past precedents, or the NFL didn't make a drastic shift, and they're trying to make a drastic shift in their punishment process, and they didn't give the players notice, it was like, what? That's why you're going to go so low on a six-game suspension? When Judge Sue Robinson said he committed multiple acts in the way that the NFL defines sexual assault, of nonviolent sexual assault, the way that she did term it. So it never made sense to me when Judge Sue Robinson elected to only give the six-game suspension. And I never thought the NFL was actually going to appeal it, or if I lean one way or another, it was more so I did not anticipate them to appeal the suspension. But then when you further find out about this new process, the advantage is really in the NFL's hands. Because even though she only said, Judge Sue Robinson, it being six games, the NFL, it wasn't Goodell who's hearing this case, he appointed someone. That person comes down with their ruling. That person has done work with the NFL before. I'm going to be shocked if Deshaun Watson doesn't settle, if this suspension isn't what the NFL wants, of in that ballpark of 17 games and most likely 17 games. For Deshaun Watson, don't you want to give yourself an opportunity to get back on the field this year? If I'm Deshaun Watson, who has not played football in a full year, I would say you would. So you may not be thrilled about the idea of taking a 12 or a 14-game suspension, but isn't that better? And it is better of the potential risk and the all likelihood, if you don't settle, that this goes to 17 games and then you're done for the entire season. And we could get into the conversation of how the Browns should approach this. And I've been pretty clear from the start. They need to be realistic. They need to be proactive, not reactive. They need to evaluate this situation. And their gut should be telling them right now, let's go get Jimmy G into the Cleveland Browns organization just for this season. For Watson, though, you should have, and even in the first case you should have settled, I'm talking about in the civil suits, which that opportunity was afforded to him and he elected not to do so, and then it got to this point where so many victims did come forward, and now he's settled all but one case. But when it comes with the NFL, I'm kind of mystified that he hasn't settled yet. But in reality, it is kind of lined up with Deshaun Watson this entire time, who said he's innocent from the start, has showed zero remorse, even though the Browns organization keeps on telling you he has displayed remorse, which is just such a big fat lie from the Cleveland Browns camp. But when it comes to Deshaun Watson, he's taken zero ownership of this so far. He said he's done nothing wrong, and he's been someone that's been operating as I should get zero games. Even remember when the six-game suspension came down, when the NFLPA, along with Deshaun Watson, urged the NFL not to appeal the suspension before it came out, there was a report that Deshaun's camp was annoyed that he got six games because he felt like he should have got zero games. So if you think you should get zero games and the ruling comes out that you get six pending an appeal and you're only willing to accept eight, it doesn't seem likely to me. The math doesn't add up that makes the NFL give an A-OK, a two thumbs up. We're going to take what you're offering. So if that was yesterday, that he was only willing to take eight, if Mike Florio, who is well-trusted and is a great NFL insider, if he's saying that settlement is not out of the question, isn't it time, and I would say it is time, for Deshaun Watson's camp to finally have some honest conversations with Deshaun Watson and go, dude, the way that this is going to work is if we don't settle, you're going to be out for now two seasons in a row because you willingly sat out last year when you didn't want to play for the Houston Texans, and that was not a suspension. And then this year, you're in all likelihood going to be suspended at probably 17 games. And even if the person the NFL hired and Roger Goodell appointed doesn't want to go all 17, it's still going to be, I would have to imagine, double of what Judge Sue Robinson gave. So if I'm Deshaun Watson, I would call back the NFL and I would say you take probably anywhere between a $5 to a $10 million fine and you ask for 12 games, see if they go 12 games. If not, you go 14. And at least that allows you the opportunity to come back for the final quarter of the season. Hickey, do you think there will be settlement here? Because I never thought there would be settlement. I do trust, though, Mike Florio. But from everything that I've followed in this case so far, I would think that they're not going to settle unless if something changes here in the 11th hour. And we don't know when the ruling is going to come down. And maybe something is starting to change. But all indications from the start of this entire mess to where we are now is that Deshaun Watson think he has done no wrong. So it's one thing for me to say, yes, he should settle and it would behoove him to settle. And it does. And even if you have lawyers and even if you have people that are advising you, tell you to settle, it still means that Deshaun Watson has to listen and Deshaun Watson has to be okay for this settlement to occur. And so far, I haven't seen any indication from Deshaun Watson that that is the case.
I don't think so. I don't think there's going to be a settlement because what's in it for the NFL? Like, what's the benefit for Roger Goodell and anyone else associated with this decision to agree to anything less than a year?
You 12, get this 14? To go away. That's what it is. Because even though Amy Dash says, and I love Amy, and she's been great with us explaining all these legal matters to us, that there is not a good chance that he would get an injunction to allow him to get on the field, you truly never know what's going to happen in the legal process, and it would still be a pending issue. So at least you could both settle and then this is finalized instead of opening it up to that chance that you find a court that would actually give you an injunction and then maybe he does get on the field and then it just becomes another issue where you keep on punting down the road on what is the final decision.
I don't know if it's worth it for the NFL. Like they have, for the first time in a very, very, very long time, have gotten the public perception on their side and have them people praising the NFL and them trying to, you know, put down a punishment that is worth fittingly the crime. And I think if they just, you have Roger Goodell talking about the reasons why they're searching for an indefinite suspension and they are not budging reportedly on, you know, anything shorter than a year, and also you turn around the last hour and it's 12 games or 14 games, I do think the public perception against the NFL would go against them. I think a lot of people would be upset. And this is one of the few times, I know they don't care about public perception, I get it. This is one of the few times it's on their side. And I think they would be in the right here to impose a very long suspension on Deshaun Watson.
I totally agree with everything you're saying. But let me just ask you this. Is there a big difference between 14 games and 17 games? That's the one thing I totally understand what you're saying about the public perception. You're right. I think Roger Goodell's getting applauded for not just sweeping this under the rug when he had every right to do so and just trust this new process when they gave the 6-game suspension. But if they settle where Deshaun Watson then has to, I don't know, pay a $10 million fine and then he gets 14 games, is there a big difference? Let's forget the money from the start, but is there a big difference from 14 to 17 where you think that outcry would actually be so great?
Well, yeah, because 14 games you allow Deshaun Watson minimal, I get it, to make the playoffs and who knows, maybe win a Super Bowl. Like if they get Jimmy Garoppolo and they tread water for 14 games and Deshaun Watson, again, it's very unlikely with all the rust.
Which would be actually crazy if they're that good that they didn't take Jimmy Garoppolo off the field for a guy that hasn't played football in basically 2 years, and even though we think when he's on the field, he can be a top 7 quarterback in this
league. What if he plays like the Browns are a good team? Like he could be in the Super Bowl.
Imagine that. Watson in the Super Bowl after sitting out 14 games. Oh, those 2 weeks in Phoenix this year where the Super Bowl is, that would be a bad look for the NFL.
And I get they're two totally different situations. Roger, I'm sure, the worst case scenario in his mind, Deflategate that year when Tom Brady had the 20-3 comeback and he had to go on stage.
Yeah, and it's not even comparable, like you said.
Right, but it's like that, he hated that. I think there'd be similar feelings if you're on stage giving Deshaun Watson a Lombardi trophy this year. I think that'd be very uncomfortable.
And 9 times out of 10, Roger Goodell does a great job at just deflecting questions that are asked to him. I thought it was very telling when a few days ago he explained why they were going to pursue a 17-game suspension. If we get to this crazy world, and it's a lot of moving pieces, where they settle, the Browns are good enough, then they get Watson back, and they actually put Watson on the field in week 15, let's just say for argument's sake, or 16, whenever the bye is factored in with that, and then he somehow takes Cleveland to a Super Bowl, when this is an organization that has won one playoff game since the early 2000s, and it was back in 2020, Goodell at that commissioner's press conference at the Super Bowl, he couldn't deflect those Deshaun Watson questions. Because then he would be the one with egg on his face looking like a moron. So I could actually see both sides of this. Why the NFL would want to settle if they end up looking good here. Because then you could just put this away. But pretty much, they have all the power in this case. It's actually a pretty... I don't know if there's any better alternative. But if I'm looking at this from one way or another, who does this behoove? It's more so the NFL because they get the final say in these punitive decisions. Whether it's Goodell who hears the case and makes the ruling, or he had just appoints someone else, and they're going to probably listen to the NFL, I would imagine, 9.9 times out of 10. So for Deshaun Watson, there's incentive to settle. You are right. Is there any incentive for the NFL to settle? The only incentive is you get to put this behind yourself. But at this point, where you've been this long throughout the process, I would tend to agree with you, and I would tend to think with you, and the only way that makes me change my thinking on this a little bit is the Florio report, that I would say that if I had to guess one way or another, the NFL's not going to settle with Deshaun Watson. I don't even know if Deshaun Watson is willing to settle. Maybe this report from Florio is someone from the Watson camp, where it's for the first time that they're actually making a serious attempt to settle, not just offering 8 games. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, 5 first-round quarterbacks from a year ago. We'll also sprinkle in Davis Mills. What are those 6 quarterbacks going to do in year number 2 in the NFL? I have some expectations when we come on back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is The Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. You will see some Trey Lance coming up tonight as the San Francisco 49ers do have their first preseason game of the year. So the Trey Lance era officially does commence. When we look back at the quarterbacks from a year ago that made their debut, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, you had Mac Jones, also Davis Mills. When you take off the year one tag and now go to year number 2, and I know Trey Lance, he only started like a game or two last year. I wonder what the expectations are for all 6 of those quarterbacks entering this season. For Trevor Lawrence, I said this to J.P. Shadrick the other day. I'll say it again. And Ryan, I don't know if you agree or disagree with this. Doesn't this feel like even though Lawrence played last year, this does feel like it's year number 1, because anytime a year ago, and I think that experience is important, even though you want to forget playing for Urban Meyer, but last year, the Jaguars were so dysfunctional, there was so many distractions, there was so much of a negative energy. For some reason, Urban Meyer, for a large portion of the season, especially early on, didn't want to use James Robinson yet. Travis Etienne, he got hurt very early on in the process. yes, it's year number two, Ryan, for Trevor Lawrence, but this does feel like it's year number one because now you're moving on to a new head football coach and you're actually having an adult in the room when it comes to Doug Peterson.
I couldn't agree more. I throw out 16 games out of the 17. I will keep the Colts on week 18. He looked really good. Now, glutton for punishment, but he looked really good, but I'm with you. 95% of what we saw, you can't even really grab onto.
Like, if Trevor Lawrence, he doesn't even need to be lights out this year. If he goes and wins 5 or 6 games this year, and he just cuts out the turnovers, and he gives you a feeling at the end of the year that you may have the guy. And remember, this was a guy that was as highly touted as Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck coming out of college. That is how extreme the hype was. So in theory, after 2 years, you would like to have a little bit more progress than that. But I would say at the end of the year, if this is a football team that could go win 5, 6 games, maybe get to 7 most, and you see half the games him give you that feeling of, okay, we may have our guy here, I would say then that's a successful year for Trevor Lawrence, right?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
When we get to Zach Wilson, now this is a little bit different because Zach Wilson played last year, has the same head coach, has the same offensive coordinator. I know the Jets could sometimes be a clown show. There were no drastic changes, though, in terms of who's coaching you, and you didn't have to deal with the same stuff that Trevor Lawrence had to deal with. Like, the biggest distraction that Zach Wilson's had to deal with was the fact that he was maybe sleeping with his mom's best friend, and now he is deemed the MILF hunter in the NFL. But one thing that's kind of lost in this equation when we look at Zach Wilson is we did see progress from Zach Wilson. We saw him have some big wins towards the end of the year. We saw him keep that team in some games. But you look at the last 5 or 6 games, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, he didn't have a lot of wins in those games, but the last 5 games, he did not throw an interception. And I do feel like if that was any other quarterback, and any young quarterback, we would look at that as a sign of progress. Now, I just want to see if you could get off to a better start, because yes, he was the quarterback of the team and had that early win up against Tennessee. I know he was not there when they had that big win up against the Cincinnati Bengals because he was out, but early on to start last year, he had a pick. 4 picks, 2 picks, a pick, and a pick. You got to get off to a good start. You need to limit the turnovers. This is a Jets team. You now have Garrett Wilson. You have Elijah Moore. I like the running back room with Michael Carter and then also Breece Hall, who they just drafted. For Zach Wilson, it's similar to some extent as it is with Trevor Lawrence. Show me 8 or 9 games where you make me think, okay, you really are the guy. You really are the answer. And then go win anywhere from 6 to 7 games. And I think Jets fans, realistic Jets fans, if they do exist, could look at that from an optimistic standpoint. Now, when we get to some of the other quarterbacks here, Trey Lance. Lance is probably, it's not probably, he's going to be the one that's under the most amount of pressure this year. Because Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch have a system and have an organization that's been working recently. They were in a Super Bowl, almost won the Super Bowl up against Kansas City. They lost. Then, this past year, you win an NFC title game. This organization, though, going into last year, told you, we don't believe, no matter what they said, we don't believe that Jimmy G is going to take us to the promised land and win the Super Bowl. So you went out there and you aggressively traded up to go get Trey Lance. A lot of people didn't think Trey Lance was going to be the pick. Remember, the debate was Mac Jones or Justin Fields, and it ended up being Trey Lance. Now, even though this is his first true year as a starter, and you expect ups and downs like any young quarterback, if you don't make the playoffs this year, there will be some 49ers fans that are going to be irate with that. And it's tough for a quarterback in his first season. I know Mac Jones just did it a year ago, and this is really Trey Lance's first true season as the starter, for you to go take that team to the playoffs. And I think we have been operating, and I don't want to be unfair to Trey Lance, and I'm not going to say if he misses the playoffs this year, it's going to be a failure, but this is a team with their roster, bare minimum. They should win 8 games, you would think. Like, Jimmy G was not a well-oiled machine with the 49ers, and they got off to a horrible start last year, and they still almost got to a Super Bowl. You have Debo, you have Kittle, you got a good defense, you got a good line. You got a tremendous play caller in Kyle Shanahan. I'm not going to say it's playoffs or bust for Trey Lance, but Ryan, I do think a lot of 49ers fans are not going to give positive reviews to Trey Lance if this is a team that doesn't make the playoffs, especially when you factor in it's in a very weak NFC this year.
Very weak NFC, a really good team around him, really good head coach. It's all there for him.
Just yeah, but growth. It's still going to be tough just because it's year one for Trey Lance. It's almost, I don't want to say he's in a can't-win situation because we saw Mahomes as his first 3 years as a starter, 50 touchdown passes MVP. Lamar Jackson, I know he played some games in his first year, but his first 3 years as a starter, winning an MVP. That just doesn't happen all the time, even though it's happened two times in recent memory. I look at Trey Lance, he's going to be under such a microscope, and there's going to be a stretch of 3-4 games where it all doesn't click for him. I know the upside is tremendous, what everyone says, but it's going to be tough to have big. I would think it's going to be tough for him at the end of the year to satisfy that fan base, because if you don't make the playoffs, I still think for me personally, I would be satisfied by his performance. If he goes wins, let's say 8 games, and he shows you that upside that everyone talks about with the mobility and that big arm. But I think a lot of 49ers fans are going to define this by if they make the playoffs or not.
Well, the good news for Lance, the thing he has going for him is that he doesn't have to do a lot. Like, this team is so good that unlike most young quarterbacks, you're asked to basically carry the team and carry a bad team. The team's really going to carry him.
Well, that's if you have the cooperation of Deebo Samuel to run the football too.
Which, look, the new deal makes it seem like that's a yes. But even if you don't have him, they still have a really good running game without him. So, you know, you in theory, everything is right there. Just Trey Lance just kind of take the throws that are there for you.
But he's got to be that guy that elevates that team. And what I'm saying here, I don't know if you elevate the team in your first year as the starter. You may not see the actual payoff of Trey Lance until his second year as a starter. That's when you may really see why this move was made, and it will be then fair to determine if the 49ers made the right or wrong move. Like, I don't care what Trey Lance does this year. I believe there's going to be a big amount of criticism either way, and I don't think necessarily all that criticism is going to be fair just because the standard is already so high and they made this move with the expectation, whether they said it or not, this is going to be the guy that takes us to the promised land and delivers us the trophy that Jimmy G wasn't going to be able to do. And when you have those standards, fair or not, you know how fans are impatient. They expect that to happen right away. And it's very rare that you win a Super Bowl right away. And you know how Twitter is, you know how Instagram is. Well, this guy makes one bad throw, people are going to be freaking out in San Francisco. And I hope that just doesn't become the case, because even though I didn't think he should have gone third overall in this draft, when I talked to Trey Lance, I was blown away by his personality. I was blown away by the way that he handled himself. This was a year before we even knew he was going to be a first-round pick. I was intrigued by the name, heard that this guy could have some potential in the NFL from what people told me. And I said, let's get him on the show. This was like the early stages of the pandemic. And he came on, did an interview with us for like 15, 20 minutes. That's when we were all working from home. And I was like blown away just because I haven't heard a draft prospect that well. Like, he's one of the more well-polished draft prospects I've ever heard just by talking to him. You just spoke to him and he sounded like a franchise quarterback. Justin Fields. Is there any way Justin Fields could have success this year? And it's not my lack of belief in Justin Fields. It's just the incompetence of this organization. This team's going to be miserable. He's going to be running for his life this year, Justin Fields.
Survival. If he's alive and walking at the end of
healthy.
The year, honestly, that's the only win for Justin Fields and the Bears. This roster stinks.
I can't even make an argument for this team to win 5 games.
They might be the worst team in the NFL. The Falcons are going to run for him. The Texans are going to run for him. The Seahawks, there. The Bears are right there.
Yeah, they'll be top 5 in the draft easily. Honestly, if they're picking outside of the top 3,
big surprise.
I would be surprised. When we get to Mac Jones, see, Mac's a weird one because Mac made the playoffs last year. So anything short of making the playoffs, especially in a fan base that's been used to winning and winning and winning for the last 20 years with the greatest quarterback of all time, is going to be viewed as a failure. In a weird way, I have confidence in Mac. I just don't have confidence in this Patriots plan where Joe Judge was calling some plays last night. It was initially Matt Patricia. It just seems sloppy and it seems chaotic. And I said from the start, I think Belichick's going to call the plays. But if that was the case, you would have seen Belichick call the plays last night. And it was a combination of Patricia and Judge, neither who have ever called offensive plays. Joe Judge was a special teams coordinator, was a wide receiver coach for a year before coming the head coach of the Giants. Wonderful hire, by the way, by the Giants. And Matt Patricia, he was an offensive assistant for 1 year in New England, but that's going back to the early 2000s. He really made a name for himself defensively. And he was a defensive coordinator, then became a head coach. That makes no sense to me what the Patriots are doing. And I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to view Mac Jones as a failure this season, because I actually think Mac Jones can be a very good player in this league. I think he showed signs of that last year. Can he be great? That's a different conversation. That's an unknown that I have right now, but I am a believer in Mac Jones. And finally, Davis Mills. The Davis Mills one, Ryan, is bizarre because you keep on hearing positive things, but I keep on viewing Davis Mills as someone that until I see that he's on the Texans next year as the starter and the intent for him to be the long-term quarterback, that means they would not take Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud in the draft, then I'm not going to believe that Davis Mills is going to be the long-term answer until he's on the roster next year and they don't draft a quarterback in the first round.
I'm with you. They're top three. It's too tempting and almost too easy not to take C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young.
Now,
they're
there were
do
times
it
last year that he played well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He could show some other teams that he's a viable quarterback. Just, I think in Houston, they're going to go in the draft next year.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, why the Washington Commanders should have just named their team the Washington Crybabies. This stuff is just absolutely ridiculous. Ron Rivera yesterday and now Jason Wright today.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
The narratives are all unfair. I mean, obviously, he left each place for their reason. Okay, yeah. Great. That's their reason. He's here for our reason. He's right here because we want him here. He's here because we see what he can do. We see what he's done. And based on what we do, we see there's an opportunity. And that's why he's here. And we have a lot of confidence in what we've seen so far. The guys have all assimilated to him. They've rallied around him. And that's a huge plus because, again, based on what we went through for the last couple of years and probably before I got here, trying to find the quarterback.
I mentioned it on air. You've gone through seven guys. You've had seven different starting quarterbacks.
Yes, and now all of a sudden there's an opportunity for us to settle in on a guy. Let's do it. Let's get behind him. Let's give him every opportunity to succeed, and that's what we're going to do.
That was Ron Rivera on SiriusXM NFL Radio. The narratives aren't unfair when it comes to Carson Wentz. I do not think he is a great leader. I've witnessed that before when I covered him in Philadelphia. He turns over the football way too much in crucial spots, and I don't look at him and think with the draft capital that the Commanders gave up, that at the end of the year or at any point in his tenure, however long it lasts with the Commanders, that you're going to look at him and go, okay, this is our guy. Now, I can understand what Ron is saying to some extent, even though we just disagree on them bringing in Carson Wentz, in that since he's there, they're going to do everything they can to support him. They should, because you made that decision. I could vehemently disagree with that decision, swapping twos when you get the lesser of the second round pick, giving up a third and then another third that could turn into a two if he plays 70% of the snaps this year. I will never agree with that decision that the Commanders made. I think it's a horrible decision, first and foremost. But since he is there, yeah, you should do everything you can to support him. But I don't think the narratives are unfair. And that's where I'll also disagree with Ron Rivera. He's your guy. Go support him. But don't tell me that the narratives that I say or others say are unfair, because they're not. I used to be the biggest believer or one of the biggest believers in Carson Wentz. I know some people now listen, they go, Zach, you hate Carson Wentz. You can't stand the guy. I used to be a big time believer. I covered the guy in Philadelphia, had a bunch of pleasant encounters with him. For a while, I used to be a big-time Carson Wentz supporter. But then through time, what I thought was the reality and was the truth ended up being a lie. And when he went to Indianapolis, I sat here on this show at the expense of my producer, Hot Take Hickey, who is a Colts fan, and told him, dude, you are falling for the trap. Like, don't put your hands in the trap and not expect the clamps of the trap to smash down on you. And Hickey went to go take the cheese, and then his hand got caught right in the trap. And you thought you were going to be able to pull your hand and get the cheese and be fine. But that wasn't the case. Because this is what Carson Wentz is. There's been some unfortunate injuries. He's had problems in the locker room. He has not been a clutch quarterback. He has not been a great quarterback. And he turns over the football way too much in a big spot. And I was like laughing last year on October 31st when it happened at the end of regulation. And then in overtime. You remember that throw in overtime, Ryan? Down the left sideline. What was it, in double or triple coverage?
Triple coverage.
It was laughable. And then one I didn't even see coming was the end of the season. You guys had a shoo-in. You had a cupcake Jacksonville Jaguars team. And not only did you lose, you got smacked. You got embarrassed. So stop trying to tell me that the narratives are unfair. Now, what Ron Rivera said is one thing, and I could sort of see Ron's side a little bit, and that you're going to back your guy. But Jason Wright today, I thought, just made himself look to be a fool. And Jason Wright has been someone I've been extremely complimentary of. He runs the Washington Commanders. He's their president. That's not an easy job when you have to work for Dan Snyder with all the nonsense and all the ridiculous stuff that Dan Snyder does when, quite frankly, he shouldn't even be allowed to own the Washington Commanders. So Carson Wentz did this interview with Scott Abraham, and he asked him some tough questions. But all these questions I thought were fair, and Jason Wright did not appreciate these questions. This courtesy of 7 News DC. Listen up.
There's been kind of a narrative out there here in training camp that you've been a little inaccurate on your throws. Consistently inconsistent has been a kind of a terminology. How would you assess your performance in training camp, and is that characterization fair?
Yeah, I mean, for one, it's camp. You know, I think I didn't know that, so thank you.
Yep. But I know you told me you don't read that stuff.
At the same time, I'm my biggest critic. So I come back after practice, yeah, and I'm kicking myself over 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 plays, you know.
Real talk here, Carson. It's been well documented. Philly didn't want you. Indy didn't want you. Do you think this is your last chance to prove that you can be a starting quarterback in the NFL?
Yeah, you know, I don't really think about all that stuff. For me, I'm playing the game that I love, and I have the most confidence of anybody in myself to deliver, to play at a high level, to, you know, be a part of something special here with this team. And so I don't put all that pressure on myself. I don't put, you know, people can feel that way, people can say what they want, and I have no issue with that. You know, that is what it is. But for me, I don't think in those terms.
So you hear that encounter, I don't think there's anything bizarre. I don't think there's anything unfair about that. I thought they were all fair questions, and I had no problem with the tone of the questions. That wasn't the audio I was expecting to hear when I saw the tweet from Jason Wright before listening to the audio, where Jason Wright said, "Thankfully, Carson demonstrated grace and class in response to this pompous, unprofessional mess. I recognize you have made a living on childlike provocation, but it needs to be called out. Don't expect special access, and good luck building rapport with the guys." I don't get what Jason Wright is doing here and bringing more attention to this interview than there needed to be. Carson Wentz, unless if he had some problem with it behind the scenes, and if that's the case, man, then he's soft as ice cream then, as soft serve ice cream as Carson Wentz, if he had a problem with that behind the scenes. But Carson, as I've heard him answer questions a million times in interviews, just basically deflected them and handled it fine. But I don't think the questions were unprofessional. I don't think they were pompous. I don't think they were unfair. You gave a little bit of facts. The Eagles didn't want you. The Colts didn't want you anymore as the starter. It's a layup question. Do you feel like this is the last time to prove that you could be a starting quarterback in this league? Am I missing something in this equation here? Because what Jason Wright is telling me happened isn't what I heard in that audio there, Hot Take Icky.
I wonder if this is Carson Wentz saying something.
If that's the case.
I wonder.
If that's the case, I'm Jason Wright. I'm saying, Carson, I would love to support you here, but man up. That's what I would say.
Right, like, Jason aren't really going out of his way to shine. And like, I think what he did was, if anything, put more attention on the interview.
Exactly.
Than anything else.
I would have never heard of this interview unless if Jason Wright didn't quote tweet it today. So whoever this reporter is, Scott Abraham, he should be thanking Jason Wright, even though his mentions are probably crazy today. And I'm okay if you want to throw a little opinion in a question. I do it all the time. And if we had Carson Wentz on the line, I would say it the same way, or Ron Rivera. I even said it yesterday when we were talking about this. I disagree with Ron Rivera saying the narrative is unfair. I would say, hey, Ron, Philadelphia, they didn't believe in him at the end. They gave up on him. I did a Sportsman on this yesterday. Word for word. The Colts gave up on him after 1 year. You tell me why you think he's going to be your guy with the draft capital that you gave up. But instead, Jason Wright today, oh, it was unprofessional. Oh, it was unfair. Oh, he was pompous. Give me a break. And now you're going to threaten this guy's access? Do you even need to have a great rapport with Carson Wentz? He'll probably only be there for a year if we're judging off past history. I had no problem, zero problem with those questions. Give me a break. This is the NFL. Not every interview needs to be a team website type of interview where it's softball question and easy question after easy question. When we come on back, this is breaking news. Deshaun Watson has just done an interview. We're going to play you that audio for the first time. It says in this interview that he's finally showed some remorse. We'll play you that audio next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love, all streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.